Public policy is a persistent and evolving force that shapes and transforms society. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Tryst with Statecraft, a Project Statecraft podcast series. I'm your host, Lavneet, Associate Editor at Project Statecraft. I'm delighted to be joined by Ms. Divya Gaur as guest speaker. Divya is a Program Associate of Powering Livelihoods at the Council of Energy, Environment and Water. Today's episode will focus on the theme Policy for Sustainable Rural Livelihoods. Thank you for joining us, Divya. We will start with basic questions to explain the nuances of the theme to our audience. So I'll start with the first question, Divya. How would you explain or define sustainable livelihoods in the context of rural India's economic and social setting?
Sure. Thank you so much, Lavneet. Thank you so much to Project Statecraft for giving me this opportunity. Happy to be here. So if you look at today's economic and social setting in rural India, the major challenges that we see is migration. So in terms of migration, the migration rate currently to urban areas is about 35%. And of this 35%, more than half of it is from rural areas. And then we also saw the huge problem of reverse migration that was happening during COVID times. Most of the rural population migrates to urban areas in search of better jobs and livelihoods employment. But when I was evaluating development programs as a part of my previous job role at Sattva, where I could see that these youth and these people who have migrated from rural areas were stuck in low-paying jobs and ultimately became the vulnerable community in the urban areas. So I think migration, of course, is a challenge. And then being stuck in low-paying jobs and becoming the vulnerable community in urban areas is another challenge. Furthermore, we know that still more than 50% of the population of our country is engaged in agriculture, which is typically suffering from low productivity and low farmer incomes. Even today, if you look at the data, an average farmer typically earns monthly an income of 10,000 or so. Beyond this, even forest dwellers, due to recent events in climate change, they are also being affected. Their production of non-timber forest produce is also being affected, which again is resulting to more migration to urban areas. Even if you look at dairy farmers, they are also, there is also a lack of fodder availability in rural areas, which again results in low income, then again leading to more migration. There is little to no economic opportunities for women in rural areas. And even if they are met with several challenges like lack of market linkages, lack of skills, etc. Then if you look at the infrastructure, then rural India, there is also a challenge of inadequate rural infrastructure. One of our research shows that more than 100 million farmers are affected due to lack of access to clean and reliable energy. This lack of clean and reliable energy is also a challenge for small micro enterprises, for the self-help groups, etc., that are in rural areas. We also have inadequate cold storage facilities, which leads to about 15% of food loss at the farm gate itself. So these are the issues that exist currently in rural India. And furthermore, the population in rural areas is more vulnerable to climate change events. And then the displacements that happen due to these events end up harming these populations even more. So in this scenario, sustainable livelihoods, they help marginalized communities overcome these not only economic and social inequalities, but by adopting the environment as a bridge or as a catalyzer and not exploiting it as a resource to build reliable and sustainable livelihoods. And Sustainable rural livelihoods, they become even more relevant when various climatic and human-made shocks pose a challenge to communities, as I just spoke about. So basically, sustainable rural livelihoods establish the fact that there is no trade-off between economic growth and keeping the environment intact. And thus, they are quite essential in today's rural context. Then example of these livelihoods, I mean, the various sectors where these livelihoods can exist is e-mobility and green hydrogen across the value chain of manufacturing, maintenance, and service sector. Then there is bioeconomy, forest-based livelihoods, biofuels, biofibers, bioplastics. So biofuels could be ethanol, biofibers like banana fibers, jute. Bioplastics are cornstarch-based plastics. Then there are livelihood opportunities in circular economy as well, recycling and upcycling. And at the council, we're working in three different programs. One is Powering Livelihoods, which I'm a part of. Then we also have Green Jobs, where we are conducting this research to map out what are the jobs that are available in sustainable livelihoods space in the state of Odisha. And then we also have something called Sustainable Food Systems, which is focusing on regenerative agricultural practices, etc.
Divya, as you mentioned, there are like several factors affecting sustainable livelihood in rural India. So I would like to ask you, how have recent policy changes or government initiatives have impacted these changes? Also, you mentioned that you're currently working on a program examining how clean energy can be leveraged to enhance sustainable rural livelihood. Can you please explain that in detail?
Yeah, sure. So if you look at the policy landscape, current policy landscape in India, I think the government is focusing a lot on sustainability, on green livelihoods. So within its largest rural livelihood national scheme, which is National Rural Livelihood Mission, the scheme does have guidelines for non-timber forest produce based livelihoods like spices, condiments, medicinal plants, etc. Under this scheme called Mahila Kisan Sashaktikaran Pariyojana, which identifies regeneration and sustainable harvesting for NTFP species. And its key objective is to promote organic and low chemical agriculture. It also promotes the use of renewable based energy services for processing activities, which can have an immense potential for green outcomes. On the conservation side, the government policy or the programs which focus on National River Conservation Program or the Integrated Watershed Development Program, these programs also aim to restore ecological balance by harnessing, conserving and developing degraded natural resources, which will result not only in the ecological balance, but also in generation of livelihoods for the local people. Then there are initiatives on circular economy. And then, of course, green jobs have been also a prime focus, especially with skill development missions focused in having courses around trainings on installation, repair, services, maintenance, etc. of solar-related jobs. Then there is another scheme called PM Kusum Yojana, which is one of the very significant schemes towards promoting adoption of solar pumps. And that scheme has been fairly successful on ground as well in terms of farmers adopting solar pumps. And Powering Livelihoods, the program that we are working on, we are primarily working on promoting the off-grid decentralized renewable energy livelihood technologies. So these are small size technologies which enhance livelihoods of the people, and they are decentralized in nature. So they use the localized or locally available renewable energy source. We've been working with the Ministry of Renewable Energy, MNRE, to work on this policy on national framework for DRE. So, and this policy is in alignment with government government's priority of achieving 500 gigawatt capacity of electricity in the country from non-fossil fuel resources. And off-grid renewable energy applications have been a focus for the government, and these are a potent solution, and they continue to be supported by the ministry. So we worked closely with them to come up with this policy framework. This was released in February last year. And now we are working very closely with them on a scheme that will come out for these decentralized renewable energy livelihood applications. And even in our impact assessment study that we have conducted recently, what we observed is that the use of these technologies and these technologies, let me give you some examples, like micro solar pump. So 0.5 horsepower solar pump, solar powered pump for smallholders, small holding farmers. Then there is something called biomass powered cold storage, which uses biomass as an energy source to run the cold storage. Then we have solar powered hydrophonic forestation, which uses solar as the energy source, but also uses hydrophonic technology where there is minimal use of water to grow the fodder. Then we have solar powered compact size refrigerator that can be used by the street vendors where there is no grid electricity connection. So the use of these technology, according to as per our impact assessment report, what we found out was that about 71% of the users of these technologies, they generated additional income, typically by about 35% increase is what we saw. Additional to this, the usage of these livelihood technologies led to increase in confidence of about 75% of users. They were confident now to buy assets and save money. They were confident in their ability to earn, work, and support family members and spouses. And these technologies are essentially very beneficial for the women because they are decentralized in nature. Thus, they cater to their mobility challenge that exists, especially in rural areas. And even among the women users, what we found out was that about 89% they reported increased participation in public and community events. 92% observed that there has been an increase in their relevant knowledge and skills. So all in all, these technologies, they result in economic and social impact. Even in terms of environmental impact, about more than 600 metric tons of CO2 was abated because of the technologies deployed through the program. So the main objective of this policy framework, just to sort of state this, that all of this evidence was very useful for the ministry to come up with this policy framework. And the objective of this framework is to facilitate the development of an enabling ecosystem for widespread adoption of DRE. And this framework takes an ecosystem approach. So from, you know, enabling a market-oriented system for such solutions which enable sustainable livelihoods to enabling access to finance, affordable finance for the users of the technology, because renewable energy technologies are often considered heavy in terms of upfront capital cost. And then also in incentivizing their adoption among women in marginal communities. For several schemes like Mudra for finance or Prime Minister's formalization of micro food processing enterprises or Agri India Agri Infra Fund, etc., these can also be converged for these technologies. So all in all, there is a lot of potential. There are already a lot of policies in existence which promote sustainable rural livelihoods. And I see a very positive outlook of the government in promoting initiatives which are enabling sustainable rural livelihoods in the country.
What's your viewpoint on the current labor force participation rate of women and other genders in rural communities? Also, how does clean energy empower women and create livelihoods for them? As you're working on this program, can you give some examples from your experience?
Sure. So if you look at the current labor force participation rate of women, it stands at about 25%, which is approximately half of what is the labor force participation rate for men, which is at 57%. And this data is from 2021. So definitely there is a lot of scope, and this has been a challenge that we've been trying to address as a whole in development sector, and also is a national growth issue, I would say, because a recent report by McKinsey Global Institute, it suggests that if we were to provide equal opportunities to women, then India's GDP can increase up to 18%. So this is a significant agenda for national growth. And in terms of challenges that women face in availing the economic opportunities, what we have observed from our ground experiences is that one, women lack autonomy over mobility because of the gender norms or patriarchal notions of safety, honor, freedom, etc. Then also because there is inadequate, unsafe, unreliable public transport in some cases, which also restricts their movement. Then there is lack of formal education, skills, and trainings, which sort of limit their ability to take up entrepreneurial activities and also scale them up. Then there are gender norms, which also pose a barrier to women's ownership of assets, which can be used as collateral to obtain loans from financial institutions. This constrains them from starting or growing an enterprise, improving their productivity and income. Then women also have lack of access to modern technology. They also suffer from the challenge of time poverty, which is allocation of unpaid domestic norms, limiting women's engagement in the workforce due to unpaid domestic responsibilities. And how can clean energy play a role in improving this labor force participation rate of women? So one, I explained in my previous answer as well that given that these technologies are decentralized in nature, so they enable home-based or local-based economic opportunities for women, which makes it easier for them to take it up, right? And then and also as per within our program itself, we have more than 70% of end users of these technologies as women. And most of these women are using let's say silk reeling machine, a solar powered silk reeling machine, or energy efficient multipurpose food processor. And what happens is that when you bring in these technologies, they reduce drudgery for women as well. So just to take an example, the practice of silk reeling in Odisha, Chhattisgarh, earlier there was a practice to do thigh reeling. So basically they would make silk yarn by reeling on their thigh, which would also result in drudgery, that is, they would get cuts on their thighs. But by bringing these machines, one, we could cater to the challenge of unreliable electricity in remote areas. Second was also that these machines resulted in elimination of this drudgery that existed earlier. And of course, it increased their productivity. So they could also save some time. They could also improve their incomes. So that's how the technology is helping them. And these are tribal areas in Odisha and Chhattisgarh. And if I take an example of multipurpose food processor, so there is a self-help group based out of Uttarakhand, Himachal Pradesh. And there earlier they would manually, produce the pulp, etc., of the juices that they were making. But now, because of this food processor, they have been able to mechanize their operations. They're able to produce a lot more in less time. They are also able to save on electricity bills. It's not as high as it would come in case of a conventional machine. Right. So there are several such examples from rural India that we have wherein these decentralized renewable energy livelihood applications have been quite beneficial for women, A, in reducing drudgery, in time saving for them, in improving their incomes. And in fact, just to quote a number from our impact assessment report, about 13% of the women through these technologies got an economic, got basically entered an economic opportunity for the first time. So they started earning for the first time because of these technologies. So yeah, these are quite impactful for women.
Okay, so you're talking about technologies and considering many of these technologies cater to rural, remote, rural and remote areas. How do we reach the people who can benefit from them?
Yeah, sure. So I think reaching the last mile has been one of the challenges that we've been trying to address within Powering Livelihood program also. And we have adopted several strategies to do so. But just to explain in terms of what are the barriers or what are the challenges in which hinder the adoption of these technologies. So basically, in terms of reaching the last mile, the challenge is that there is limited mobility, like we discussed in case of women, where they cannot travel to far off areas to see these technologies, experience them, etc. Second is, of course, in terms of limitation in access to mobile phones or digital content as well. Right. So these are some of the challenges which happen in terms of adoption of these or reaching, making this technology reach the last mile. So what we did or what has been our experience is that we conducted hyperlocal events. So these are localized events which happen at the block level, wherein we bring in women from self-help groups who are a part of self-help groups and also from the local community. And multiple technologies are on display, which give a touch and feel experience to the potential users of the technology. So here the women and the other potential users, they get an opportunity to see the technology, to understand from the entrepreneurs firsthand on how these work, to understand the business model as well, etc. So these hyperlocal events have been very effective in reaching to the targeted communities at the local level. And through these, we've been able to reach more than 5,000 potential end users, and there has been a very good response. So hyperlocal event is one such strategy that we adopted. Second strategy that we adopted was creating demo champions. So what we believe is that having community-owned models, they can actually accelerate the adoption of solutions or accelerate social change at the local level because of the trust and the confidence that exists with that local member of the community. So we created women as demo champions, where we train these women on how the technology works, their business model, their financing model, etc. And then they would create awareness within their communities, among the local community members about these technologies, which could lead to lead generation. So that was another strategy that we adopted at the local level. Also, with the growing influence of YouTube, we took an innovative approach as well to reach out to people in large numbers. And we collaborated with social media influencer to generate awareness about the technologies. And through this strategy, we could reach out to about 7 lakh audience who viewed the video, this video on solar dryers and the user of it talking about its impact. So yeah, we've been trying these very hyperlocal strategies, which will help us reach the last mile. We've also partnered with local distributors or local rural distributors who have already been working towards products which are solar powered, like home-based appliances, etc. And we have partnered with them to integrate these products in their portfolio. Other than that, we are, because we're working closely with the government, so we have also formed partnerships at the state level, like with UP State Rural Livelihood Mission, Bihar Rural Livelihood Mission, to reach women at scale and at the local level, to leverage their network through these partnerships. So yeah, these strategies have really helped in reaching at the last mile.
Okay, so we'll come to the last question of the podcast. What are the key challenges hindering the adoption of sustainable livelihood solutions in rural India, and how can these be addressed?
Sure. So when it comes to the challenges in adoption of sustainable livelihood solutions in rural India, so just looking at the types of livelihoods, so then there is farm-based livelihoods, off-farm and non-farm livelihoods. For the farm-based livelihoods, the challenges that we have seen is one in terms of awareness that, okay, does such a solution exist? Is there a solution which can reduce my dependency on diesel? Is there a solution which can reduce my dependency on grid electricity, which is not very accessible at the farmland? Then in terms of knowledge of operating a certain technology or a certain livelihood, like how does it work? I have not seen anybody else using it. So basically, very few cases that they would have heard of, especially when it comes to sustainability space, because these are new technologies, niche technologies, which they have not heard of before, and they have not seen much use of it as well around them. Then, of course, high capital cost remains a challenge in adoption of these livelihood solutions. When it comes to off-farm and non-farm, so off-farm could be that they are producing value-added products using, let's say, the food processor or the solar dryer. If there is a produce that is getting wasted, or they want to make a value-added product of the produce that comes from the farm, then the major barrier that is there is the market linkages, both backward and forward. That is, in terms of backward, there is they need linkages to procure raw material. In terms of forward linkages, they need a market to sell their products to at the right price. So these are the barriers when it comes to off-farm. In addition to awareness, knowledge, and then seeing very few cases, success cases around them, and high capital cost. In fact, even in non-farm, the challenges related to market linkages exist. So overall, what we think can hinder, can accelerate the adoption of these technologies is that we need a very dynamic ecosystem, which is end-to-end. It supports from generating awareness, enabling adoption through accessibility to affordable finance, to giving them the right skills, the right knowledge on how this particular technology or how this livelihood can be practiced, to enabling market linkages where they can sell their product, what they're making, where they can earn an income through the use of these products, and also having a set mechanism for after-sale service support. So one of the major challenge or barrier that we saw as a part of our impact assessment study was that people did not know who to go for getting the technology repaired, or what to do in case the technology stops working. So an end-to-end ecosystem is very much required, wherein the policymakers, the financiers who are going to extend the credit, policymakers who want to come up with the policy and sort of facilitate the adoption at scale. And then the role of the rural distributors who are going to integrate these products into their portfolio. All of them have a role to play in enabling a dynamic end-to-end ecosystem, which can lead to a widespread adoption of these technology at scale.
Thank you, Divya. Thank you for answering our questions with such insight. We look forward to collaborate with CAW in the future as well for our more podcast episodes. Thank you for taking out time from your busy schedule.
Thank you so much, Lavi. It was a pleasure. Thank you.